Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Throughout the community, Tulsans are working to provide for the 850 Afghan refugees who will be or are now resettling in the Tulsa area in the weeks and months to come. It's part of the estimated 1,800 refugees who are authorized to resettle in Oklahoma, more than any other state outside of California and Texas. And there will be great needs for these new residents. Due to a quirk in their status in arriving in the U.S., they're coming into the United States as parolees rather than asylum seekers, and it will fall on private institutions to provide some of the essential services any refugee will need, beginning with housing, furniture, clothing, household items, food, and sustenance, just to begin. Most have arrived without documentation and will begin the process of seeking asylum without paperwork. And without that change in status, these new residents can't work, receive a driver's license, or receive SNAP or Medicaid benefits. So there are needs for attorneys, paralegals, translators, mental health and medical professionals, caseworkers, drivers, ESL teachers, and the list goes on and on. While Catholic Charities and Congregation B'nai Emunah are serving as hosts for the new residents, the YWCA will offer help with resettlement issues, a whole range of faith community and nonprofit outreach agencies are helping as well. The Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry is working with its member organizations and serving as a connection between many of these groups. Aliyah Shimi is the executive director, and she joins us today to talk about the resettlement issues for our new Afghan neighbors here on Studio Tulsa. Aliyah Shimi, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I was just looking at the first initial resettlement of Afghans in the United States. About 37,000, I think, is the initial number. And it appears that Oklahoma will take in more refugees than all but about two or three states, 1,800 in this first. How prepared are our institutions to handle this influx?
So normally, with our agencies that resettle refugees in the state of Oklahoma. So in the past, it's always been Catholic Charities. They have been the only agency that resettled, and they have the direct contract with the State Department. This year, we are happy to announce that B'nai Emunah, our synagogue, is also contracted, and so they will be resettling as well. And like I said, normally, we have somewhere between 200 to 300 throughout the span of the entire year that come and that we help welcome into our state. And so having 850 come within the next just a couple of months, as you can imagine, is very overwhelming. But in true Tulsa style, we are trying to partner with every agency possible to make that a lighter lift.
Where do these organizations start in welcoming these new residents?
Sure. So Catholic Charities and B'nai Emunah will do the initial resettlement since they are the ones that have the contract. Of course, YWCA is connected into that loop. The first 3 months of case management is done by Catholic Charities and by B'nai Emunah. So they do the housing, they help get their documentation, they help work on all of that piece. Then YWCA comes in with ESL programs, with job placement, with helping them get them connected to services here in Tulsa, with getting their children enrolled in school. And we have partners like TU Law Clinic, which we are so grateful for, who will be doing the immigration piece. And our organization, Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry, is kind of that bridge organization that helps other faith communities and other organizations connect to these larger agencies that are doing that work. So most of them have contacted us, and wherever, however they want to fill that gap, we've been able to help kind of do the traffic, right? If you're donating furniture, let's donate it to Catholic Charities or to B'nai Emunah. If you have housing, let's look at those agencies. If you want to do welcoming, let's look at this agency. So that's kind of what we've been doing.
And you've sort of alluded to a wide stream of things that have to happen. And as I understand it, these families, and they're mostly families. Well, yes. First of all, let's talk about the composition of these new residents. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1,800 over a year. Is that right? Is it 850 at this point?
It's 850 at this point for Tulsa, a little over 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, just Tulsa alone is 850. Right. 800 to Catholic Charities, 50 to B'nai Emunah. But of course, that number, you know, will fluctuate, and they're already asking to see if we can take on more. Because, you know, as we knew, the initial evacuation number out of Afghanistan was roughly 124,000. Of that, we have about 70,000 that's supposed to be stateside here in the United States. So just trying to get those 70,000, you know, resettled, as you can imagine, is, you know, very delicate procedure.
Yeah. Tell us about the composition, because it's mostly complete family units.
Mostly children, some family units, some single mothers with children.
Do we have unaccompanied minors?
Yeah, I believe there are some unaccompanied minors, but again, I don't know if we're getting any here in Tulsa. We were initially told we weren't going to be getting single males, but I found out last week when I accompanied one to the dentist. I took him to the dentist, and he's here. He's left behind his wife and two children in Afghanistan. And so that's kind of what our makeup looks like. Majority of them are children.
Did most of them work with the U.S. government or U.S. agencies in Afghanistan?
Yes, either U.S. agencies or ally agencies. Like this gentleman that I had the opportunity to take to the dentist was Afghan Special Forces, and he was working directly with the U.S. forces. Mm-hmm. And so most of them have either, you know, translating or worked on the base, or they were in the military themselves, and they aided our allies in some way or shape for.
Now, as I understand it, these families are not set up the normal way we would do as the U.S. accepts refugees or asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. And actually, because of that, it will probably make their resettlement a bit more onerous and more dependent on private resources.
Absolutely.
Can you describe the differences?
Sure. So traditionally, when refugees are being settled, most of the time they'll be in a refugee resettlement camp, a UNHCR camp, anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and they'll be vetted in those camps, and, you know, all of that will happen, and most of them will apply for all their documentation, you know, before they even come stateside. And so this group is not coming in through the normal refugee channel. In fact, they are coming in through a program called the Afghan Parolee Program. And so I know that's not the greatest term to be referring to our new neighbors, but we understand that there is a legal precedent for that term to be able to get them stateside and to get them to safety. Now, what that means is they are not eligible for the normal services that refugees who come stateside would be. So that's everything from Medicaid to SNAP and things like that. I do understand that we are pushing for some legislation to see if we can pass some emergency legislation to be able to provide those services, and I know that's in the works. But as of now, my understanding and most of our understanding is that they come stateside, they receive a change of clothing, they receive 3 square meals, you know, at whatever military base they're at, and they receive a stipend of $1,225 per person, and then they apply for their documents stateside. All of those documents that they are applying for goes to one office at the State Department where 70,000 individuals' paperwork is being shipped to. And then, you know, they have to sift through all that paperwork, get it organized, and then get it sent to the agencies that these people are being resettled to. So you can imagine how long it's going to take to get them a Social Security card, to get them an employment authorization document, to be able to get them working, to be able to provide benefits for them. So that's why it's imperative upon us to do more of the heavy lifting than normal when it comes to resettling some of our new neighbors.
Yeah. Will they be eligible for a green card, permanent residency, quickly, or will that take years?
So, you know, again, from our understanding from, you know, Mimi Martin in the TU Law Clinic here, they have 1 year to apply for asylum. So to have that status change from parolee to asylee, and they have 1 year once they come stateside. So from that time, the clock starts ticking to make that case for asylum. And we understand that asylum cases are the hardest cases to prove. And when you've left the country with literally nothing, I don't know how you're going to be able to prove that, you know, your life was in danger and all of these things to be able to make that asylum case. So we're asking for paralegals. We're asking for attorneys. We're asking for anybody that can help do some of this lifting with the TU Law Clinic and YWCA to help with some of their status change. And we understand that, you know, some work will be done pro bono, but we do understand that there's a lot of fees, filing fees and things like that, that are accompanied with this. And that's why we started a fund at TMM for people to donate to be able to help switch their status. They want to be parts of this community as quick as possible. They want to stand on their feet. They want to be able to provide for their family. And we want to be able to help them do that. We look at ourselves as the glue that's going to help put the pieces of their lives back together.
Yeah. And that 1 year to move from parolee to
asylee.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard that term before.
Yeah, asylum seekers, yes.
Yeah. If they don't do that within a year, are they prone to be
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a very strong legal understanding of the system. And so that would be a great question for either Elizabeth or Mimi here at TU. But, you know, we're trying our best to figure out how we can get, you know, fast forward this process for them. I understand our government did its best to try and get them out as quick as possible to get them to safety. But now we have several other hurdles that we have to overcome here stateside. So
now, many of the new residents, mm-hmm. Many of the refugees from Afghanistan mm-hmm. were put sometimes in a third country mm-hmm. to be vetted mm-hmm. or on military bases mm-hmm. to be vetted. Do the people that are coming to Tulsa and to Oklahoma, have they been vetted, or does that vetting process continue once they're here?
So to my understanding, these people were already vetted initially in Afghanistan when they were working with allies. They had to be vetted to be able to work with allies, correct?
I understand.
And so I understand that process went on there. I understand that there is a continued vetting process as they were selected to come stateside. I understand that there is an additional vetting process that happened, the military bases that they've landed on. So I know that this is probably, refugees in general, are probably the most vetted population that comes to the United States. So I know a lot of people are afraid, oh my gosh, we're getting all of these new Afghan neighbors, and are they vetted? Are they safe? You know, I've heard several questions like that. And when I explain to them that refugees worldwide are the most vetted population, then that kind of, they're able to, you know, breathe a sigh of relief.
They're vetted, and their individual case is looked mm-hmm. at with a fine-tooth comb.
Absolutely.
Because, frankly, a lot of our systems are really designed to reject asylum claims.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Like this individual that I transported to the dentist. He's Afghan Special Forces, and even though he worked very closely with our military, put his life on the line there, he had to leave behind his wife, his 2-year-old, and his 5-year-old. And while he was in my backseat, he was having a conversation with his wife. I hear her crying. He's upset, and he's crying in my backseat because the Taliban is hunting him, and they are finding her every, you know, corner she turns to try and find him. And, you know, he wasn't even able to bring his wife and children here. So if we could approach our new neighbors with some compassion, you know, they helped us, and look at what they're having to go through. So I would just hope that a lot of our Tulsans would approach this topic with compassion.
Yeah. My guest today is Aliyah Shimi. She is the executive director of the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry. The Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry is working with its member organizations and serving as a conduit to welcome these new Afghan residents who are resettling in the United States, 850 here in Tulsa mm-hmm. in the area, and more in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. And she's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. I want to get back to that, what services they have received from the government. And basically, mm-hmm. it's a change of clothes, mm-hmm. Meals while they're in, quote, detention, unquote, and $1,225 a person, one-time, single mm-hmm. payment. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine resettling your life in a foreign country on, if it's a family of four or family of mm-hmm. three, on less than $4,000?
Yeah. I mean, I flew in a couple of weeks ago with a family of 9. It was a mother, father, and 7 children that flew in with me from Houston. And, you know, I was so happily surprised to see the All Souls welcome team there with Rick Gibbons and the rest of the team, you know, about 20-plus people welcoming these individuals with these welcome shirts that they had on. And, you know, I'm sure that they are grateful to be here. But if you can imagine having to leave your family behind, having to leave, you know, your loved ones behind, I can't imagine the trauma that they've already been through there. And then having to leave their country, come to a new country, they don't speak the language, some do, some don't. They don't understand the culture, some do, some don't. You know, having to quite literally put the pieces of their lives back together, you know, there's going to be a lot of mental health, you know, needs to be able to help deal with this trauma that they've dealt with for 20 plus years, you know, with this war-torn country that they're coming from. So if you can imagine just having $1,225 a person, you know, and that's that one-time stipend that you get, we're hopeful if we get some of this new legislation that might pass, that that will allow them to be eligible for Medicaid and for SNAP and for some of these other benefits. And so I mean, we'll
so
just
So really,
see.
At this point, it's on the private community to mm-hmm. to pick up the slack mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. that. You're going to have to provide meals because mm-hmm. until they can get some sort of permanent status or at least a working status, mm-hmm. they can't hold a job.
They can't. They can't be employed. Legally, they cannot be employed until they have that employment authorization document. They can't do anything without their Social Security card. How are they supposed to open a bank account? How are they supposed to get a driver's license? They can't do any of these things without that. And so it's just very difficult. And so that's why it's us doing the heavy lifting, our community doing the heavy lifting.
Right. So what is the biggest critical need at this particular point? As, you know, you're still welcoming Absolutely. Families and family units coming in.
Sure.
What's the biggest need at this particular point?
So I know that housing, as we all know,
yes,
we already have a massive housing shortage here in Tulsa, Oklahoma for our Tulsa residents.
Right.
We have people that have been waiting for over a year who are already, you know, qualified for housing assistance, all of these things, who all they need is someplace that they can rent, right? And so luckily with this contract, the federal contract, they can house within 100 square miles. So we've been looking at Bartersville. We've been looking at, you know, Stillwater, all of these surrounding areas where we might be able to find some housing. So if we know anybody that has rental properties that might be willing to rent, you know, please contact Catholic Charities. Please contact B'nai Muna. So that's our number one largest need is housing. And then so with TMM, we have started a quote-unquote store at Fellowship Congregational Church. We've had two different stores who have been gracious, St. John Ascensions and Sophisticated Seconds, to donate all of their items, new items, for us to be able to set up. We had an organization in Oklahoma City, Mercy Mission Pantry and Caleb's Cause, that gave us a truckload of diapers and wipes and baby bathtubs and things like that. So the fellowship hall at this church quite literally has turned into a shop for us to be able to bring some of our families safely, for them to be able to come and pick school uniforms, shoes, boots, house slippers, things like that that we have available for them. So if anybody would like to drop off gently used clothing or new clothing or gift cards, we're trying to give them as much agency as possible. If you can imagine, everything has been taken away from them, and then we're saying, this is the house you're going to live in, and this is the food you're going to eat, and this is what you're going to do. So we're trying to give them gift cards so we can take them shopping, let them pick what they want to do, things like that.
Gift cards sounds like a really good idea because
absolutely.
All of a sudden, not only is it give them some degree of choice, mm-hmm. but it also is an assimilating exercise.
Absolutely. Taking them to Walmart, Target, Kohl's,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
anywhere for us to be able to welcome them and say, look, this is where we would come and this is where we would get these things. You know, we have lots of people who want to welcome them at the airport. So they can check into Catholic Charities website or to B'nai Muna's website, and they can be, once they have a background check ran on them, then they can go to the airport and they can do welcomes. We have several organizations like Hanohana, Food on the Move, and Oklahoma Food Bank who have come together to be able to provide nutrition for our new neighbors, right? And so as they're staying in hotels, we have meals that are being delivered to them to be able to keep them fed while they're here.
You know, that's another big assimilation is
Absolutely.
The dietary changes.
Mm-hmm. We've already heard about it.
Yeah. So are they just having to adapt to the typical American diet, or?
For the most part, yes, because those are the agencies that are preparing their meals. And so we're hoping with some of our other Muslim organizations, they might be able to prepare some food that are closer to their culture. And so we're wanting, at TMM, we're going to be hosting social events for them where we might be able to do picnics outside and in safe spaces outside to help meet some of our new neighbors and for them to get some of the food that they're used to, for the kids to play outside and just, you know, play whatever, soccer, basketball, whatever it is, and for them to meet some of our Tulsa citizens. And so we're looking for these opportunities to work with our case managers to be able to do that.
So housing, mm-hmm. obviously,
the furniture.
I mean, furniture mm-hmm. is another big thing.
Yeah, furniture is a big thing. So again, Catholic Charities website and B'nai Muna's website, you can click and they have a great website where you can say, hey, I have two couches, I have bunk beds, I have a queen bed, whatever, and you can select what you want to donate. And they have a 40,000 square foot warehouse where the furniture can be delivered to, and then they coordinate off according to family, and then they deliver it to those apartments or those condos that they find. And so they have a pretty nice system that's set up as far as furniture is concerned to be able to donate those things. and household items. We have several groups who are wanting to do welcome baskets. So we said, you know, let's figure out what it is that they're not getting covered. And once we find out what items are not covered and are still missing, then we'll be able to put these baskets together with these missing items and then welcome them in their homes.
Yeah. Now, 850 refugees are coming in this initial group.
Next couple of months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it like a couple of families a week? What is the flow?
You know, and it's been very irregular. You know, some days we get 9 in one family. Some days you get 4. Some days you get, you know, 2 moms with a couple of children. So it just kind of depends as they send them our way. And that's how we accept them. So
I'm trying to think of some of the, maybe somebody knows like a language, the language or something.
Sure.
Are you looking for translators?
Of course. So the 3 languages that we're looking for translators is Pashto, mm-hmm. Dari, and Farsi. So if you have anybody that can speak any of those 3 languages, please, by all means, contact either Catholic Charities or Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry or the YWCA. And we would love to have interpreters. You know, those are 2, especially Pashto and Dari, are not as common. And so even Google Translate doesn't have Pashto and Dari. You know, Farsi is one thing, but Pashto and Dari, you're not going to be able to find on Google Translate. So, you know, trying to find translators to be able to do that has, you know, has been a great need. The YWCA and several other organizations are also coming together to do ESL classes for them to be able to teach our new neighbors English. Catholic Charities does kind of an intensive class for them Monday through Thursday from 12:30 to 2:30 to kind of get them assimilated and adjusted to our standards of living here. You know, these are the places you have to go to get your driver's license, and this is how you're going to enroll your children in school, and this is how you would go to the grocery store and things like that. So, you know, they've really hit the ground running since they've been here trying to get adjusted to this new life.
Obviously, with the legal proceedings, you're going to need paralegals and attorneys.
And lay people who can even file, you know, who can make copies, who can just sort and sift through paperwork, you know, 2 years asking for anybody that can help with that.
Yeah. I would imagine documentation is going to be a huge issue because, frankly, there's a regime that really doesn't want to help. You know, they're looking for some people within the community, and others, they probably just don't want to help them because they've left the country.
Most definitely. I mean, again, this country has been war torn for 20 plus years. If you can imagine, most of these people left with literally just the clothes on their back. A lot of them have come with 0 documents in hand. This gentleman that I took to the dentist, you know, I was trying to communicate with what little English he had, trying to figure out what his birth date is, trying to fill out the paperwork for him, you know, and it's just very minimal information. But until we are able to get some of that information here from case management, which it takes a little bit of time, you know, we're just going to have to make do. And so it's a catch-22. How are you supposed to file all these documents for an asylum case while you have no documents, you know? So it's very hard.
Will attorneys be trying to piece together their history? Mm-hmm. You know, because they may not be able to get documents. They'll have to rely on, you know, units that gentleman served with.
Absolutely.
To say, yes, he was a member of our, he was in our camp. Mm-hmm. He helped us in this way to make that case for asylum.
Absolutely.
Now, the other thing about asylum is this won't occur here in Tulsa.
No.
It'll be in Dallas.
Yes. And so, you know, the cost of traveling down there, the cost of filing, that's why we're trying to raise funds at Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry so we can get them to the points that they need to get to. We've reached out to all of our houses of worship and our congregations and our organizations who may have vans and buses and drivers who may be willing to donate some of their time to be able to help transport. So there's a lot involved in this.
My guest today is Aaliyah Shimi, the executive director of the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry, as the ministry is working with its member organizations as a conduit to welcome our new Afghan residents who are resettling in the United States here in our community and in Oklahoma as well. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Earlier you were saying these residents will be all over northeastern Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. When you think of small towns, there may be more available housing, maybe not.
Sure.
So you're looking at this will be a widespread net across northeastern Oklahoma.
And this is just the beginning. Nobody's saying that that's all we're getting is just 800, right? No. It looks like we'll be getting more. And so, you know, we looked at some programs of doing community gardens at some of our houses of worship and some of our organizations, and to bring some of our new Afghan neighbors who like to farm, who like to grow their food and things like that. And so this is yet another program that we can implement where they can build some relationships and work and, you know, to be able to provide for themselves.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of what the ministry is doing, besides serving as a conduit, mm-hmm. is really trying to help this community integrate mm-hmm. into the rest of the community.
Absolutely. My parents came here in 1975 as immigrants. They weren't refugees, and they had to get assimilated, they had to integrate, and they had to learn how this process works. And so as the first gen, I feel a great responsibility to be able to help those who are coming to the United States. And America is, the United States is an amazing country. It is the land of opportunity. It is a safe haven. And I don't like to use the analogy of a melting pot, but I like to use the analogy of a salad. You know, we make this beautiful, delicious, healthy, vibrant salad with all these different ingredients that we add in there. And our new Afghan neighbors are yet just another ingredient in that salad bowl. So
we've talked about some of the ways people can volunteer their time and talents.
Mm-hmm.
Could we go over that list? And then obviously,
sure.
Cash is always a good thing as well.
Absolutely. Money, time, talent, and treasure, as we call it.
So yes. What are some of the talents that people mm-hmm. can, if they wanted to volunteer,
sure.
what are the talents you're looking
for?
So
some of the talents we're looking for: mental health professionals, any licensed practicing, therapist, for the long haul. We're going to have a lot of trauma that we have to help with, right? Both pediatric and adult. Social workers to be able to do some case management. Attorneys, paralegals, anybody who's willing to just, sift through paperwork or sort. Volunteers who can help come and help sort through clothing, or who can help restock diapers and things like that. Volunteers who can help drive. If you have large vans or vehicles that you can help transport some of our neighbors back and forth. People who'd like to cook, people who'd like to sew or knit, who might like to start any of these groups for us to be able to get some of these people out for them to help integrate. Educators, any of our educators who are willing to teach ESL classes, to teach English, right? So these are just some of our volunteers. We had several TU students who came out Sunday to help us move all of this, a U-Haul truck full of new clothing and shoes. And so TU has been an amazing partner in this, not just the law clinic, but your student body. Your student body president, Karim Ahmedan, has just been amazing at rallying the troops and getting everybody together. They're doing several drives here to put welcome baskets together. And so we are just so grateful for TU.
Now, treasures,
yes.
Last part. If people want to contribute, what's the best way to do it? You mentioned it might be even better to do gift cards.
Sure.
What are you looking for exactly?
Sure. So, like I said, gift cards for any of the stores that, you can get new undergarments, any of those things. We have winter coming up, right? If you'd like to donate at www.tumm.org, at our website, 100% of all of your donations goes directly towards the Afghan, our new welcoming Afghan program. Of course, Catholic Charities, Menei Emuna, or some of these other organizations, YWCA, great organizations to donate to if you'd like to help, whether it's with rental assistance, whether it's with, helping with their immigration fees and filing fees, any of these things. Please earmark what you're donating to and for, and we'll make sure that money gets where it needs to
get. Or it can be just general purposes,
absolutely.
What's needed.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you are certainly doing important work in our community, as well as your partners in welcoming these new residents. Aaliyah Shimmy, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich, for having me on. I appreciate you.
Aaliyah Shimmy is the executive director of the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry, which is serving as a conduit and connection with many of the organizations working to help the 850 Afghan refugees who are resettling in the Tulsa area. If you'd like to contribute, you can contribute to Catholic Charities, Congregation B'nai Emunah, who are hosting refugees, or the Metropolitan Ministry at tmmtulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.